Hello and welcome to the podcast series called Behind the Athlete. My name is Raf Agostino and I have the privilege of working at School Sport Victoria. You might have noticed that we're really excited by the athletes that have come through our Team Vic pathway, the athletes we're calling Team Vic alumni. These athletes have gone on to be elite athletes and even wear the green and gold and represent their country and become an Olympian. We're pretty excited by that. So we knew there were life lessons to be learned by talking to not just the athletes, but the people who are support staff and have played a significant role in these athletes becoming who they are. So enjoy this short podcast series called Behind the Athletes as we dive into the ups and the downs, the highs and the lows, as we talk to parents, coaches, teachers, principals, anyone who's had a significant part in these Team Vic alumni athletes becoming elite athletes and Olympians. We're really excited and we hope you get lots of lessons out of this short series. Enjoy.
Did you know? School Sport Victoria offers 650,000 sporting opportunities in 31 different sports. At 10,700 events across the state, every single year. That's a lot of kids playing sport. And for over 25 years, the Victorian School Sports Awards have recognised more than 1,500 students, teachers and volunteers for excellence and outstanding contribution to school sport. Now that's a champion effort.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. We've got another episode here where we're talking about Alistair Donoghue, and I'm joined by his very lovely mum, Amanda, and Patrick, his brother. How are you both?
Well, thanks.
Yeah, great.
Good, thank you. Thanks heaps for joining us. We're here to talk about Alistair, and I know Alistair's come through the Team Vic pathway on a few occasions. Just talk us through a little bit about yourselves before we get into Alistair. Just tell us a little bit about yourselves first.
Well, I'm CEO of a community housing organisation and am based in Melbourne. Spent 15 years in the Territory bringing up the kids, where a lot happened, which we'll probably talk about. But that's me in a very short nutshell.
And what about you, Patrick?
Yeah, I live in Hawthorn with my wife, Carly, and my son, Simeon, and I'm a pastor at a local church. So at the moment I work with Swinburne students in kind of chaplaincy role.
Good job. Where are you a pastor at the moment?
City on a Hill, Anglican Church in Melbourne's East.
Nice. Love Guy Mason a lot, and my wife's actually a pastor over at Eltham. So
good one.
So I'm a pastor's wife, I guess is what you'd call me. Brilliant stuff. Well, that's good to know about your background there. Let's just talk a little bit about Alistair and you know, was there a time when you thought that Alistair might have made the Olympics and become a Paralympian at some point, you know, from a young age?
To be honest, no. The story with Alistair and his cycling is a long one. I was doing triathlon because one of Patrick and Alistair's brother was doing swimming and triathlon stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that led me to include Alistair in kids triathlon, which then led to us meeting a guy up in, this is where we're based in Darwin. There was a guy that was putting together a cycling program because he wanted to have his kids involved in cycling and wanted to get a group together, but had done lots of research and phoned lots of different people about the best way to incorporate kids into cycling. And it was a program that was, ahead of its time, where you had a BMX component, road bike component, mountain bike component, track component. And so this is when Alistair was about 11. And I remember this guy approaching us my husband and I, and saying, you know, it's going to require a lot of commitment, you know, a bit of money, but we can probably source some secondhand bikes, and you know, will involve interstate travel coming down from Darwin and exposing kids to competition and all this sort of stuff. And I was like, oh, we've got five kids. Alistair's the youngest. Do we really want to get involved in this? It sounds like pretty heavy, you know, duty work running him around here and there. And then at that time, Alistair's dad was tragically killed, and we hadn't actually sort of committed at that stage. But after that, amidst all of my grief, what am I going to do? I've got five children. Alistair's the youngest. And it was like, okay, I'm going to include him in this program because they're a good bunch of people. It'll keep him fit and active, hopefully give him something to focus on, and take it from there. And so that was when he was 11. And then he was going well, so good athlete and good on the bike, bit of a daredevil on the BMX stuff. And then he was at a creek with some kids when he was about 14, jumped out off a bank on a rope. The rope got tangled around his arm, and he was left suspended while the kids tried to unentangle him over this creek.
Wow.
And that's where he damaged his upper arm and didn't actually become para athlete at that stage. It was like, fortunately, it wasn't his legs that were damaged. It was just this arm. We had a couple of trips down to Melbourne over the next year or so. And when we were down there, we visited a plastic surgeon trying to work out, you know, how to fix this arm and get back the strength that he'd had muscles shredded and a bit of nerve damage. And so we were trying to work out what to do. And the doctor was saying, well, you could take, I can't remember what it's called, but there's a part of your leg, you could sort of take that out and attach it to the arm and build it up. And then there was this other option of taking part of his back and having this skin come around, and he would have to be like that for a few months. And that sounded gross. And anyway, and after about, at the end of the second visit, a question emerged about the actual, how, you know, how much he would actually redeem of his strength. And the answer was zero. So all of these conversations and visits and everything had just been about the cosmetic side. And so, of course, Alistair and I both said, well, he loves cycling. He seems to have a little bit of, you know, a talent at it. We weren't going to touch the leg. And, you know, a couple of months off the bike with this back flap being attached to his arm with the skin he didn't want to interrupt his training program. And as soon as we realized it was all cosmetic and nothing about getting back use of the arm, it was like, okay, see ya, thanks for the advice. And we never went back to the plastic surgeon. And then we came down to Melbourne, moved down to Melbourne, and he still was really focused on cycling, and that's when we got involved in a club. And it wasn't until he was about, I don't know, 18 or something, that somebody said, oh, he was talking to one of the paracyclists at the track, and he said, you know, you should try, you've got similar sort of injury to me, maybe you could get into the program. And that's when sort of went from there. So did we ever think he was going to be a para athlete? No. Do we ever think he was going to be an Olympic athlete? Probably not. So, I don't know about you, Patrick.
What are your thoughts, Patrick, in terms of, did you ever think, you know, he may one day become a Paralympian of some sorts?
Look, whatever he became, I knew it was going to be because of me. It was he was always a gun athlete, and kind of whatever sport, because, you know, there's five of us siblings all together, he's the youngest, and whatever sport the top four competed in, he would always do better as we went through. And after he did his injury, honestly, you know, we thought it was great that cycling was keeping him busy. Mm. But then all of a sudden, when he started competing really heavily, he would say, you know, what's your dream? I want to compete in the Tour de France. And in the back of my head, I'm kind of going, well, that's never going to happen, mate. So what's your backup? And then he would say, I want to compete in the Tour de France. And I think, and that was probably around 2011, 2012, when mm-hmm. I realized, well, actually, that's the attitude that the guys who race in the Tour de France have. There's no plan B. Mm-hmm. There's no, and that's when I thought, okay, you know, maybe you can actually do this. And, you know, it's amazing. He's just year after year, he's just gotten better and better. And he kept mm-hmm. on getting the results to kind of back up that statement. I just want to compete at this level. And so, yeah, I think early days, none of us even knew about the, you know, the details of the Paralympics. We'd watch it every now and again, but probably like most of Australia. And we had a very low level. And then when it became an option, it seemed like a really great thing. And he's just pursued it and done so well in it. So.
And he has had some amazing seasons in the lead up to 2019 was arguably probably one of his best. And he is in, you know, I know I'm preaching the converted, but I'm sure you'd agree that he's in fantastic form going into the Paralympics. But, you know, your mum's just talked about something that's pretty important here, that he had an accident when he was 14, lost his dad when he was young as well. And you've went through that as well. How did you cope and what did you do? What would Alistair say in terms of coping with both of those things? As a brother, you got four other brothers. How did you cope with the accident and losing dad as well? That would have been a very tough season of life.
Yeah, it was massive. So, and it all feels like it was in the same year. So, sorry, I must have misspoke. We've got older sister, older brother, me, younger sister, Alistair. So two brothers, two sisters he's got.
Gotcha.
So during that season, I was 15, about to turn 16 when we lost dad. And I think Alistair was 10 or 11. Wow. So he's incredibly young. Obviously a huge life flip for a lot of us. And I think all of us, so you know, Grace was almost 20 and Alistair was 10. So there was a spectrum of ages in between. Yeah. So it affected all of us so differently. So my experience of recovering from dad, it was really by God's grace that we were able to kind of all get through. It's something that we actually, I love talking about it with other people, but we, as siblings, we don't often talk about it because it's, I don't know, they're the people that it hurts to talk about it with. So for my experience of losing dad, it was like losing my best mate. And for Alistair, I can imagine it would be really like losing, you know, your childhood dad. I mean, it sounds, sounds obvious, but when you think back to your memories of your dad when you were 10, there's not a lot there. So, it was obviously huge for him. So that shows an incredible amount of resilience and also massive credit to mum and all the other incredible adults in his life that were able to get around him and shepherd him kind of through that season and still today. It's just huge. Like mum has been massive, and Alistair always, you know, speaks so highly of the way that she looked after him in that time. But for me, I just like, it feels so helpless, you know, when you're 16 and you've got this 10-year-old brother and you're just kind of going, all right, well, how do we, for want of a better term, father this younger dude? And sport was an amazing godsend there because he's a massive ball of energy. So just getting him on the bike and getting him to, you know, get his heart rate up for a couple of hours a day, I think was a pretty good idea. So that was really big for us. And with his accident, I remember getting the phone call from mum saying, yeah, Alistair's injured his arm.
Yep.
And he was always crashing, so, it was kind of a common thing. But getting to the hospital and seeing the seriousness of the injury, I walked in with a bag of McDonald's, gave it to him as a present, and he just vomited it everywhere. And then I stayed with him that night. And, you know, back then I wasn't a Christian or anything, but I remember just being on my hands and knees, just saying like, what is going on here? Because you know, we've had this tragedy in dad already, and now all of a sudden Alistair's arm looks like it's never going to recover. At that stage, we didn't know if he was going to lose the arm, if it was going to be fine, if it was just a broken arm, or but the doctors were saying it was pretty serious. So To be honest, mate, out of our depth the entire time, and maybe we still do feel like that a bit. But yeah, he's a resilient kid. He's done the whole thing with a smile on his face. Yeah, the fact that he's a emotionally in tune and in depth thinker is the attribution of mum and other people around him for sure.
Well, I think you've been very vulnerable there. Thanks, Patrick. And you know, Amanda, Patrick has talked about you, and I think hats off to you. You've done quite amazing to raise five children, and Alistair being the youngest. What did you do through that time to get through? Because that would have been a really difficult season of life for you as well, to raise five kids on your own and then to be thrust into this world of disability per se, where you have to learn everything in terms of what's available for your child. How did you do it?
Relied on other people. So Darwin is a fantastic community. Yep. You know, a lot of people don't have family there. And of course, all of our family were down in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And the older kids had some good friends with good parents, and I will forever be appreciative to them. And, you know, Alistair had good people as well. And there was never a shortage of people offering me help. You know, do you want to can I take so-and-so to swimming? Can I take Al to, you know, out to the BMX track? Or
yeah,
I think that absolutely got us through. There was one lady that cooked a meal for us every Thursday for a year, and I would come home from work, and for us, the kids, it was Thursday was the central, you know, night of the week, because the food was delicious and we always knew that it was going to be on the doorstep. So I could always manage to have them home on a Thursday. You know, it wasn't without its challenges, but I got really, really busy. The way that I coped was just to do, you know, I haven't played sport. I never played sport. I was never a sporty at all, and suddenly I'm doing triathlons and just doing heaps of physical activity, and it was just a way of letting stress out. I just remember, you know, going swimming and crying underwater, going running and crying while you're running, you know, that it really did help. And, you know, I just sometimes I look back and think that I didn't give enough to the kids at the time, but then I, you know, think, well, I was dealing with it myself, and that was why I was so appreciative of friends, just knowing that the kids had people that they could connect with and help them, you know, in a way keep them on the straight and narrow, because they weren't always on the straight and narrow. You know, they were teenagers. It was Darwin, you know, and that's partly what prompted the move down to Melbourne. I just decided that maybe Al could do with some family support, and a change in scenery, and also just the opportunities that came through cycling. I think it was definitely part of the decision to move down to Melbourne, because the competition was so much better down there, and he was at a stage where he needed it. And as Patrick said, he was someone that just really wanted, you know, what he wanted. Didn't sort of have a career in mind. It was just all about cycling. And so I thought, well, that's the way it is. Let's run with it.
Which is fantastic. Now, and thanks for sharing too. I mean, it must have been very difficult. And as you've said, you would go for runs and be quite emotional about it, which is totally understandable. What advice would you give to parents, and for you too, Patrick, as a brother, what advice would you give to anyone listening in who thinks they might have the next Paralympian, Olympic champion living with them now? What would you say to them?
For me, it's about listening to them. Like, I never pushed him.
Yeah.
It always came from him. Like the other kids, whatever they wanted to do, I like to think that I encouraged them and assisted them and supported them wherever I could. And it was the same for Alistair. If he he wants to do, he still just wants to do cycling. And I know I've got friends that are worried about his education and, you know, he doesn't have a uni degree. I was just aware that this is the top of his mind, and if that's what he wants to do, I'll just do it to the best of my, you know, as much as I can. I didn't, I suppose I did make sacrifices. I was going to say, oh, I didn't make sacrifices, but you do. You just,
yeah, Mum, your house is a bike shop.
What's that?
Your house is a bike shop. So it seems like a pretty big sacrifice.
Yeah, and those trips over the Chandler Highway at 4:30, you know, 5 o'clock, a couple of times a week. It's like, why am I doing this? But you just do.
Yeah, what about me, you, Patrick?
Yeah, I think if you think you've got the next Paralympian sitting there, back him in and leave the doubt to other people. Like, it's, yeah, it took me a long time to believe my brother could do it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like an idiot because he could do it. And of all the people to be, you know, in your life and in your corner, your family's the number one. So, you know, rely on the wisdom of the experts in the area. So the cycling coaches who are encouraging, saying he's got this potential, you know, I wouldn't know what way a bike goes up or down. So it's like, you know, rely on them to tell him whether he can do it or not. And you just back him in and keep on encouraging him. And, but also hand in hand with that is just, there's no greater form of humility than your family. So like, we keep him pretty humble and don't let him get away with much. And so, you know, I do think he gets his resilience mostly from around our dinner table. So, you know, keep on being family.
Well, I'm sure he has lots of fond memories about, you know, growing up and having dinner with it, because, you know, as you've mentioned, you've got a big family too, which is, it has challenges, but it would be amazing as well. What did you both do to keep the enjoyment of sport in there for Alistair? Because enjoyment's really important to keep people in the sport. And judging by the very distant view that we have of Alistair, he absolutely loves what he does. So what did you do to foster that as a young child, from a young child?
Patrick, you can talk about the BMX stints in the front yard.
Yeah, I think we just competed like our whole childhood. It was always Jeremy beating me up, me beating Alistair up, quite literally. And so it was heavy competition from day dot in our house. And as we got older, obviously that separates. But, you know, every time Jeremy and I would come down to the BMX track, all of a sudden Alistair would see us out of the corner of his eye, go for the biggest jump and just stack it. And like, it, we brothers just impose pressure. And so, and it's great. Like, and he, I remember even just a couple of years ago jumping on Alistair's ergo and putting out more watts than he could, because I'm, you know, a foot bigger than him. And so, and he, just the look of determination and sheer, like, no, I'm going to crush you in this. He's a competitive, competitive guy. And so I just keep on poking the bear. I think that's important. And because, you know, like, he's a monster. Like, he is the reason why he wins races, because he takes the line that no one else wants to take. And right. He's so gutsy when he goes for it. So
yeah.
He, and that's why, like, yeah, you really see that. I mean, when he was racing, I think the Santos Tour Down Under or the Herald Sun, I can't remember which one it was, but he was in a breakaway with two of the guys who were in the Tour de France, and the commentators on the TV were just loving him. They were just calling him Alistair the Animal, because he was just, he knew he was out of his league. He knew he was racing with these two guys, but he had his opportunity to try to win a stage and try to take it off these guys who are just so much bigger, so much better. They're a different caliber. And he just went, you know, red zone to the wall and took them up Arthur's Seat. And at the end of the race, you know, they gave him a pat on the back. And it was a real, like, yeah, that's what gets this kid here. He's just, all Donahoe men had this stupid, undeserved confidence. And I don't know why we got it, but yeah, it gets him far.
Very good. Anything to add there, Amanda?
I don't ever remember pressuring him to do it. He wants to do it. And I think If he hadn't wanted to do it, you know, we just would have stopped. So it just wasn't, I wouldn't have seen that there was much point if, you know, if it's not driven by him, then trying to drive it, even if I, you know, even if I know he's got talent, I can see he's got talent in other areas, but me talking about, you know, going off and doing uni degrees and stuff does absolutely falls on deaf ears, doesn't it? So for the moment, this is, he's got talent, this is what he wants to do, so I'm happy for him.
Very good. Now, and also Patrick talked about, you know, the aggressiveness and the competitive part that the boys had, and you must have had some very stressful nights there where the, you know, the boys were competing against each other and it might keep you awake at night. But tell me, how did you balance the achievements of all your kids? You've talked about having five kids. How did you give it due credit when you have someone like Alistair who's, you know, achieving quite high?
I think the age gap was enough that that didn't necessarily become too much of a problem, as Patrick alluded to. You know, he's bigger and taller and he's older, and there was probably more of sibling rivalry between Jeremy and Patrick, and they were doing swimming and surf lifesaving stuff together, whereas Alistair came, you know, he was just being those few years younger. And he did forge his own path by not doing swimming and surf life saving stuff as much. He went into the cycling, and that was definitely a road that the others hadn't traveled. And in fact, all five of them are completely different. I'm just amazed how different these kids are. And each of them has got different interests, and they've chosen to do different things. So there's still competition, but it's not, you know, it's not cycling competition, even though Patrick does like to think that he's a bit of a cyclist now.
I was going to say, I've just got a text message a couple of days ago from Alistair that when he finishes up at Rio, we're going to have a sprint race of 5Ks to see on foot. So like we're still teeing up some, because, you know, we just want to see who's better.
Brilliant. I love that. I love that. And was there a time, Patrick, for you when you struggled because he was achieving and you felt that the attention was unfair in a sense? Was that, you know, the brotherly sibling rivalry, did that come out at that point?
No, not at all. I think I'm a healthy enough narcissist to make it about me at some stage.
You're so honest, it's funny.
To be honest, like seeing him succeed is awesome, and it's never been anything like that. I mean, as Mum said, we're all in very different fields. Like I was a builder, now a pastor, and Grace is in law and Ruby's in health, and Jez is into film photography and carpentry and stuff up north. Like, we're all just in such different areas that each one of our successes is a collective success as well. So nothing but joy. You couldn't pay me enough money in the world to race for the distances that he raced. I've no interest in it whatsoever.
Yep. Brilliant. That's so good. Now, just sticking with you, I'm don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'd imagine losing a dad and having a younger brother, there would have been a part of you that stepped up to assume a fatherly figure, assume a role of responsibility on Alistair, make sure he doesn't get hurt anymore or hurt again kind of thing. Is it hard to marry up or keep your distance between letting the coaches do the coaches thing, because you know a bit about cycling, and just being that brotherly older figure in his life? Is that a hard balance for you to keep?
Hard in the sense you just feel like you're inadequate. Like, so being, just like being a dad or being a husband or, you know, doing any role, you just feel, man, I just don't know what I'm doing here. So you're just winging it the whole time. But being an older brother for him, like, for years I've had this recurring dream of being in a mass shooting and trying to protect Alistair.
Wow.
Don't know if there's anything in it, but, you know, like, it's just one of those, it's one of those ones that I probably should go see someone about it. But it's like, I think that summarizes the way I think about is that he's my little dude that I need to protect. But also, you hit this age with your brothers at around 20, when all of a sudden you have a beer together and you think, you've gone from being my little brother to being my mate, and you're genuinely funny. Like, I find him, he's a genuinely funny, great human being to hang out with. Really love talking with him. We send each other, we tease each other a lot, but also, really affirming phone calls often, and much more peer-to-peer these days than back in the day, I think, when you kind of get that, those roles kind of thrust upon you from circumstance. And, you know, I don't think I did it particularly well, if I'm perfectly honest, in Darwin.
Can I jump in there, Patrick?
Yeah, mate.
Family secret. But, so Patrick comes home late one night in between, I don't know what you're doing, in between clubs or something to get changed, and tells me the next morning, oh, I found Alistair climbing over the fence at 3 o'clock in the morning or something.
Like,
wow. Okay. First of all, Al's climbing over the fence at 3 o'clock in the morning, and Al and Patrick's doing these changeover shifts, so old enough to drive. so that was like, that was Patrick being definitely stepping into the father role. And, you know, I have to thank Patrick so much for being honest at that time when he was, he didn't have to be. He could have, he recognised that it wasn't appropriate behaviour for a young kid to be doing in the middle of the night. And yet Patrick was willing to step up. So,
Thanks, I think it, no worries. It was a tricky time though, like, you know, because, I was definitely living a very wayward life and could see Alistair heading in the same path.
Yeah.
So part of my feeling of hypocrisy, I guess, was, mate, don't do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like, this is a really stupid path to walk. Mm. I really wasted a lot of my late teen years on partying and drinking and just being a fool. And I was seeing, I mean, that's just kind of being a young guy in Darwin. And Alistair was really, like, going forward into that direction. So part of my role was just trying to steer the ship, trying to encourage Mum, get down to Melbourne, get him out of here, because this is where he's going. And yeah, huge amount of regrets in that time, but also I think wisdom there. Yeah.
Well, thank you for both sharing very vulnerably. I think that's I guess it's in a sense it's semi-normal, because he looked up to you and he saw you as that older figure, whether he'd lost his dad or not. I think every boy goes through the look up to brother kind of thing. But great that you recognize at such a young age and were able to steer yourself and him on the right track. Because, I mean, I don't know him very well. I don't know him as well as you do, but I hear the same things and I feel the same things about him. He's such a nice boy. He's such a really, he's funny. Yes, he's funny. We've had him on interviews before and he's just hysterically funny, but he's just such a kind-hearted young man. And I think that's a credit to both of you and the work that you've put into him. Tell me, Amanda, was it hard trying to balance the work in that he needed in education and the effort that he needed to put into training? Was that a hard balance for you to keep him on track, so to speak?
It was, because he wasn't particularly interested in school. So I had just, I'd made up my mind that I just had to get him over to year 12, and then it was up to him as to what he wanted to do after that. And, you know, I know he's intelligent because he did end up finishing year 12 without a lot of work. If it hadn't been cycling, it would have been something else. But his passion was cycling. I just don't think he was that interested in school. So I'm just very glad that we got to the end and, you know, I had to stop hassling about homework. And that was the deal in a way that we had, that, you know, let's just get to year 12, then you can do what you want to do.
Right. So good that he finished year 12, but he's now doing something that he loves, and who knows what might, you know, the future might hold for him. What about for yourself, Patrick? Was that hard to keep him on track in terms of education wise and keep him focused on school and the importance of that?
Yeah, to be honest, again, hypocrisy. Like, I hated school and left in year 11. So went and did a myriad of other things and end up doing a trade. And then now I'm at theological college. So have definitely regretted not concentrating in school harder and learning how to study. But, yeah, for Al, I mean, it was just like, yeah, again, I think it goes back to that disbelief of, is this actually what you're going to do? Are you actually good enough to do this? And then when he started getting those results, it was kind of like, okay, I'm like, yeah, this seems like a legitimate career. So, he's pretty good at proving me wrong.
I think it's, by the time Alistair was in year 12, it was obvious to me that you didn't have to have year 12 to go on to university. None of the others did that normal trajectory, which I had done. I left year 12 and went to uni. And so there are so many other pathways to a career. And, you know, you probably know yourself, Raph, but how many people that you know as adults ditch one career in the middle of, you know, middle age and find something else? So I had no, and still, I mean, now I'm starting to think it's more about finances that he doesn't have, he has no savings. You know, it's been a sacrifice, huge sacrifice financially for him. But in terms of education, this has been a life experience that of no other, you know, how the places that he's traveled the world and the people that he's met are just a different form of education. It's the financial cost that, if I have a concern, that's what it is. But I know that, you know, when he sets his mind to it, he's driven and he will find something that he likes. And if he wants to make money, I'm sure that he'll knuckle down and make money.
Yep. No, that sounds really good. And you're right. There's so often we put pressure on our on the students to find that one thing, that one job or that one career path they want to go to, but actually, you were speaking to three people here. We've had three or four different career paths and we don't get to the age where, you know, you leave year 12 and you go straight into something that you love because you, as a person, you do change. And as you change, your expectations of life and life lessons shape you. And that's how you end up in the career that you're in. And I think one of the most important things is job satisfaction in anything you do, no matter what you do, not the money, but loving what you do as well. If you had to say, just on the last question for both of you, if you had to, you know, just say one thing to anyone listening, what would be the one tip for life that you would give them, you know, in relation to what we're talking about, for anyone listening, what would be the one final kind of tip or the quote that you kind of live by, so to speak?
For me, it's, I don't want to say enjoy it, but he has to love what he's doing. And we all do, I think, you know, that knowing what motivates you to get up in the morning and to be driven by what you do, that makes getting up in the morning a wonderful thing.
Yep.
And, you know, I do it, you know, in my work, I just love what I do. And it's, so spring out of bed in the morning. And I know, you know, for Alistair, it's not always easy when you're tired from the day before. And I know there's many times that he's wanted to lie in bed and not get up, but he loves what he does. And that's the driving force. That's the motivator. So,
yeah. Brilliant. What about you, Patrick?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I'd say that, like, so like Alison and I share the same faith. So for him, he's known and loved by God and I'm known and loved by God. And that means that the vocation doesn't really matter. And it means you can really truly find joy in that when everything's in perspective. So that's, I don't know if you've picked it up when you speak to Al, but he just has a good grip on that he's not the center of the earth. And I think that's super important for athletes and especially, like, because his job, he wrestles this tension of that it's all about him, and it's actually quite a selfish career in the terms of he spends hours and hours and hours on his bike. But he has a really healthy perspective, I think, that the world doesn't revolve around his cycling, and he knows that, And so I just encourage anybody who is an aspiring athlete or para athlete that, you know, just understand that this doesn't make you have value or valuable, that you are valuable. So.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I love that. And I love that, you know, you both share the same faith, but I love the fact that you are able to, you've been able to articulate, and for Alistair as well. We've loved just getting to know him, and we believe, and I know I'm preaching to converted here, but I'm sure it's not the end of the road for this young man. He's still very young. Yes, it's Tokyo now, but he's probably got a number of World Championships, Com Games, Olympics, Paralympics coming up. So we're going to continue to champion him. We're going to continue to raise awareness about his sport and his progress and his performance. We're proud of him no matter what he does, but I do believe he's a good chance to come home with a medal or two in Tokyo. And I don't think I'm just saying that. I think he's got some amazing form at the moment. So who knows where that will end, but we just want to say thank you so much for giving us your time, and we'll continue to champion him.
No, it's great. Thanks, Heath.
Thank you.